Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Do you remember that Danish mom who was visiting the city and left her baby in a stroller on the East Village sidewalk somewhere where she was having coffee? That's evidently accepted practice in Copenhagen, but the police got involved here. That story and others came to mind when Michigan native Mailing Hopgood had her first baby while living in Argentina and noticed some key differences in child-rearing practices there. Her new book, How Eskimos Keep Their Babies Warm and Other Adventures in Parenting from Argentina to Tanzania and Everywhere in Between, breath after that long title, is the result, and she will be joining us every Thursday this month as we delve into some of these cultural differences and the questions they raise. Welcome to WNYC, Mailing Hopgood.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
And we'll start with one of those key questions. What's natural and what's constructed culture, to quote an anthropologist you cite? That came up for you around bedtime when you were in Argentina?
Absolutely. When we just moved, actually, from Argentina. We had been living there for more than 7 years, and we had our first child in Argentina. And there you will see children from infants to toddlers to school-age children out very late at restaurants, at parties, midnight. You'll see them running around. They'll be sleeping in chairs, etc. And it was so different from what I knew growing up in middle-class America, where the mantra is get your kid in bed by 7, 8, or perhaps earlier, in their own room, in their own space, in a quiet environment all the time, every night, and don't break those rules. And it was very striking to me. And it's interesting because every visitor we've had in Argentina thought the same thing. They were just shocked that kids were up so late. And that made me start thinking about, what, you know, is that? Is this just awful for kids, especially since I had a kid? I was a new mom. And where did this come from? And what is the, you know, how did these two behaviors play out? And what is the result of that?
Did they win you over, or did you stick to early bedtimes for your daughter?
Well, you know, in the end, when I started to investigate, there are actual routines in Argentina. They are just skew later. And we, because we lived in Argentina, tended to skew later as well, because preschool start later. Mealtime is later. Restaurants don't open until 8 o'clock. If you want to go out with your kids, you're not going to eat until 8 o'clock in most places. Mm. And you're just sort of, the culture dictates how you create your routines. But, you know, we tried to do a mix of both. We had routines. We tried to be as early as possible, but we made exceptions, a lot more, I think, than some of my friends here in the USA.
So, listeners, I'm sure we have representatives from many cultures, as always, here in the New York area, who can weigh in. What did you think was just natural when it came to child rearing until you saw another culture do it differently? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Did this happen to you when you immigrated from wherever to this country? 212-433-WNYC, or if you're from the United States, were you shocked when you were traveling abroad to find out how some people and subcultures in general raise their children? 212-433-WNYC, or what do you think is universal? 212-433-9692, but very interested in getting representatives from many cultures who can weigh in. What did you think was just natural when it came to child rearing until you saw another culture do it differently? 212-433-9692 for Mailing Hopgood, author of How Eskimos Keep Their Babies Warm and Other Adventures in Parenting. And this idea, Mailing, of natural versus cultural is a main theme in your book. You also write about the way French parents approach food for children. How is that different?
Sure. I took a look at some rural French families, and basically, first of all, there are no, in the families I spoke to, they don't have kids' food versus parent food. They introduce foods that they're eating very early and really don't try to separate what's adult food versus kids' food. They're expected to eat with them around the table, eat with them all the time. A lot of them raise their own, you know, have gardens, et cetera. They participate in that. They participate in the preparation of food. But mostly it's in the culture of eating and valuing the food that the whole family is eating. Some of the families.
So what does that mean? No equivalent of the chicken nuggets or, you know, the hot dogs and fries while the parents are eating quote-unquote grown-up food or kids' menus at restaurants?
Absolutely. There wasn't, at least in provincial France where we did the interviews, they generally didn't have kids' menus. They didn't have separate kids' food. Now, that said, you know, the globalization of fast food, of food in general, kids' meals are everywhere. Fast food is everywhere. But in the culture in the family is that you would sit down and eat what your family eats, and there's no separation between what kids eat and parents eat. The same thing I found, well, I also just wanted to add a note. I'm from Taiwan, and when I visit my family in Taiwan, I find it interesting because, you know, we say, so often I hear, and I even, you know, I've even said it, you know, kids won't eat that, or, you know, just a general statement on the yucky foods mm-hmm. that kids surely won't touch. Well, my family, you know, little kids 3 years old eat fish eyes and dried fish and things that, and seaweed and things that, you know, we would say perhaps in the USA, oh, they're never going to eat that.
You can't get fish eyes on the dollar menu at the Taiwanese McDonald's. Ettore in Mamaroneck, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm Italian, and I married my wife in 82. She's American. And a few years later, we moved to the States, and that was one of the issues, when the kids should go to bed. And to me, it was sort of strange to send them when it was still sun outside, especially in the summer. I mean, in Italy, you're used to enjoy the end. I did when I was a kid, the sun until the end, I mean, until it gets dark.
Yeah, and does school start later in Italy? I'm curious, because here we have high school sometimes starting at 7:30, depending on the school.
Well, no, at that time, the school was starting probably at 8 o'clock, 8:30.
That's early.
But with the school was that normally the first day of school was the 1st of October, and then it ended in June, and then you have July. Actually, June, July, and August.
So longer summer vacations and kids staying
up. It's sort of strange to see the kids going back to school in August.
Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. And here is Beth on the Upper West Side. You're on WNYC. Hello, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
You know, I, with our first child, we have four kids, I was very dedicated to that American way of getting your child to sleep in his crib very quietly at night. And then, you know, at a certain point, we began to feel like we were prisoners of this scheduling because we wanted our son to be with us. We wanted to be able to do with things. So we had to actually deprogram him and sort of teach him, you can fall asleep in mommy's lap or in a stroller or in a chair. And it's actually so much more enjoyable to be with your kids that way, I feel, than sort of being under this sort of militant scheduling mm-hmm. that is so much a part of American life.
Beth, thank you very much.
That's definitely what Argentine families that I spoke to said. You know, one grandmother said to me, you know, I know it's crazy. The kids get a little crazy late. But, you know, it would be such a shame if they couldn't be part of our family time. And family time is skewed later. But that value for them was higher than the value of routine and being able to get up early and be productive early.
So in exploring these different approaches to child rearing for your book, were you looking for the right or wrong way to do things? Or just comparing what different people do?
I was comparing as a journalist, but then I, you know, as a mom, you want to do the best thing for your kid. You want to find the right way. And so part of me wanted to see what was the best way. But in the end, you know, after interviewing people and talking to people in different environments, you come to the conclusion that that's very adaptable to the environment, to the family, to the culture. But and it's these behaviors, these parenting methods, are to create a certain kind of citizen. In the U.S., we would say early to bed, early to rise. We want to be productive. We want kids to be independent, sleep in their own rooms, etc. And in other cultures, they're raising different kind of children, you know, a different, they want them to be more part of the community, part of their family, closer to the family, extended family, spend more time there. So, you know, there's a difference in the goals of parents and in society, and we adapt our parenting to those goals.
And Susan in Manhattan writes on our comments page, to that end, I have spent many years in developing areas, so I threw out all the books that people offered to me and basically adopted what felt right to me. Parents really should respond to their own child's needs and create something that works for them. And I wonder where that leaves Kate in the Hudson Valley. Hi, Kate.
Hi there. I'm turning you off. My four kids were born in four different countries. The first one was born in London, and my husband was Brit. So the big difference in our house was Brit culture versus Yank culture. Sorry, English versus American. I had a baby in India. She was born with an Indian doctor and a British midwife. And my last was my Yankee baby. She probably cost more than all three of the others put together.
Did you say Holland was a third? So India, England, Holland, and the U.S.
And the States.
So what's the biggest difference in child rearing practices that you saw anywhere?
The vocabulary is different. British kids were much more formal. And when we were living outside of London, for instance, the news agent gave me an appraisal of how my kids' British manners were coming along.
Mm-hmm.
We had a neighbor who spoke to me in England and asked me, please, not to let my three-year-old say hi in front of her three-year-old, because saying hi and sounding American was very bad manners.
Uh-huh, too informal. How about in India? Anything jump out at you?
It was totally different. We had nannies. No, there was no compulsion to conform, mm-hmm. because India is so multicultural even without the expat.
And I'm going to leave it there, Kate. Thank you very much. Interesting story, Mei Ling. Four different babies born in four different countries. But I guess this all brings up the point of how we judge others' parenting. Do you think when we see toddlers in strollers on the subway at 11 p.m., we should just relax about it and pretend we're in Argentina?
You know, perhaps. I mean, we are very quick to judge each other as parents, I think, in the U.S. I think people in Argentina, at least my experience and in other cultures, they're judgmental in other ways because they're judging on their values. But, you know, there might be something going on there, you know, that is cultural. As long as there are many different ways to get the universal needs met for children, and that's very much what I found in doing research for this book.
Danny in Massapequa, maybe not so convinced on that staying up late thing. Right, Danny?
Well, I have four kids, and I came from a family with a lot of kids. And I don't know about staying up. I mean, I disagree. One of the callers said they put their kids to bed before the sun went down. I never had that. I don't think that's a little too early. But, you know, we're in America here. The schools and society starts earlier. The kids have to go to bed earlier to get the proper sleep and nutrition that these doctors tell us they need to have. I mean, I'll let my kids stay up late on Sunday night if he wants to watch the Super Bowl. My youngest is 8. You know, it's not going to kill him to be up to 11 o'clock, but to think of routinely taking him out to a restaurant at 9 o'clock at night, I don't think that's appropriate at that time. I think they need to be wound down, and that's just the way our society is. And we've been doing so good. We've been doing okay in America so far. The funny thing is about the stroller is because I grew up in Brooklyn, and my mother back in the day would leave the stroller outside the store with my younger brother, and I'd stand there because the strollers were the size of cars back then. They were huge things, and you would leave the baby in the stroller, and nothing ever happened to anybody.
Right. So not unhappy with that Danish woman, but unhappy with the Argentinians. And you bring up the medical question, which I think is really crucial. And, Danny, thank you very much for calling again. Keep calling us. Did you research for your book any medical reasons for specific bedtimes or food choices? Babies still need the same amount of sleep. Older children still need the same amount of sleep worldwide, right?
Right. No, it's very true. If you talk to the scientists, there is a general agreement that we need a certain amount of sleep to function and to thrive. We need a certain amount of nutrients to function and thrive. The question that scientists are debating, that is debatable, is how, when, and where we get that sleep, for example. I mean, there are cultures, in Argentina, for example, and the last caller has a good point. We are in America, and the society and the culture dictates how we make our rules and we choose to do our parenting. So he makes an absolutely good point, and that's sort of the point in these different cultures. They have different rules, different societal constraints. And, yes, we do need a certain amount of sleep, nutrients, but the question is how, when, and where. And there are cultures that get it different ways. Argentina, people tend to get up later. I cannot believe when the toddler, you know, my daughter's preschool mates, and their parents say they get up at 9 and 10 on the weekends. I mean, that's amazing. There is generally a siesta, etc. So, I mean, they're...
Mm-hmm. Right. You're waiting for the day when your toddler wakes up at 9 and 10 in the morning. Mei-Ling Hopgood is the author of How Eskimos Keep Their Babies Warm and Other Adventures in Parenting, and she will join us every Thursday this month to continue to compare parenting styles worldwide. So make a note of this time if you're interested in this topic. Mei-Ling, this is a great start. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.